I'm curious your perspective on frugality and faith and Christianity. Do you see these things being connected? Is that only in certain areas of the church?
No.
What is that relationship?
I think it's totally like that. Like, you feel like you have to be that way. And just this whole cultural idea of a pastor's wife. Yeah. Like, oh, I have to hand make my own dresses for my girls, you know?
Totally. Totally.
I have to fit into this mold. I have to take the casseroles. I mean, it's so much of a mold, right? And
yeah,
I was worried about being a pastor's wife for that reason.
Sure.
And then being a therapist, it was like, oh, so you can give me free advice at church, or you can see me at a discounted rate because your husband's a pastor and that's how you live your life.
Welcome to Money Skills for Therapists, the podcast that helps therapists and health practitioners in private practice go from money confusion and shame to calm, clarity, and confidence with their finances. If you've ever felt overwhelmed by numbers or avoided looking at your business money, you're in the right place. I'm Lindsay Bonham, therapist turned money coach and creator of Money Skills for Therapists. Before we jump in, check out my free on-demand masterclass. You'll find the link in the show notes or at moneynutsandbolts.com under masterclass. It's the best first step to finally feeling empowered with money in your private practice. Let's get started. Hello and welcome back to the podcast. Today's guest is Whitney Owens. Whitney is a counselor, a group practice owner, and she is a faith-based practice consultant. Today, Whitney and I dig into a topic I haven't, I think, touched at all yet on this podcast, which is faith and money. Faith is a big part of our relationships to money. It's one of the spaces that we receive messages about money, whether that's when you're growing up or with your current community. And today, Whitney and I get into how she reconciles her Christian faith with charging premium fees, being a successful group practice owner. We talk about guilt in terms of being financially successful and also being a Christian. We talk about messages about frugality, specifically in Christianity, and noticing some of the differences between, you know, being a pastor and being a self-employed person, what is different about those things. And then we also get into some of the practical systems that have allowed Whitney to be so successful in her group practice therapy business and also in her consulting. Here is my conversation with Whitney Owens. So Whitney, welcome to the podcast.
So glad to be on the show.
I am so excited to have you here. I'm so excited for the topic that we've talked about today. We'll see where the conversation goes. But I think this is a really rich topic. And this is something I haven't touched yet on this podcast, which is also really exciting when we get to talk about something new and turn something over from a new angle. So Whitney, before we dive in too much, can you tell folks just a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yes. So I'm located in Savannah, Georgia. Most people can tell by my southern accent. It is on the coast of Georgia, which I love. So I'm near the beach. But I have a group practice here, Water's Edge Counseling. We are private pay, 17 therapists. Just opened our second location in February. So doing that, having the itch for buildings and more locations, that's been fun. And then in addition to running my practice, I also am a business consultant that specializes in faith-based practices. So those are people that would say Christianity is a part of my values, overt or not in the way they market their practice, but it definitely influences who they are and the way they run their business. That could be solo or group practice owner. When I'm not working, I am with my husband. He's actually a pastor. And I have two children, two girls, ages 9 and 12. And I love to read, travel. I love singing. I am in a local choir. And gosh, we got to have fun stuff that we're doing outside of work because it makes us come alive, right?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, I had heard a phrase years ago, which is that we have to make sure that our lives are more compelling than our work. And that's what I think of when you describe that, like travel, singing, you know, like ways that we come alive. Because it's easy to get absorbed into the work that we do and have lives that are a bit flat and two-dimensional. And I'm hearing you have a rich life outside of work.
Working on it.
Yeah. So digging in then to faith and money. This is something that I've seen had come up with my students over the years, not surprisingly, as they're working through their beliefs around money, right? Like so many of the beliefs that we have around money can come from our faith community, come from what we witnessed growing up or what we experienced, and maybe sometimes even beliefs that folks don't want to hold anymore, but that are really have shaped how they think about money and the world. So I'm curious for you. I know that you are a premium fee therapist. You run a good practice. You know how to business. You're not new here. For you, how do you reconcile charging premium fees, running a group practice, building wealth with your values as a Christian?
Well, this is packed, right? Because we have the idea of, well, charging our fees, faith or not, that's a whole thing, right? And then faith just makes it more complicated. I think therapists that have that Christian background feel a lot more guilt, because to us, it's like, this is our calling. This is our mission. This is how we feel like God's put this in our heart to do this work. And so then when we charge for it, we feel guilty because, look, missionaries don't charge. Pastors, hey, my husband's a pastor. they make some money, but it's not like they're rolling in it. You know what I mean? And so then we feel like we have to do the same. But the thing is, we're not set up the same. My husband's a part of a denomination. He's got that extra support. That's how he's paid. Like, I don't have that set up. You know, so I've got to find something that's sustainable. I think something that was said to me, actually, this was said by Mike Michalowicz when he came on my podcast. I love him. And
yeah,
he said, you know, Whitney, when you don't charge your full fee, do you think about that during the session? Like, are you thinking about your stress about money or which clients are paying full fee, which ones aren't, you know? And I was like, well, yeah. And he was like, so you're not fully invested the way you could be, you know, if you were charging your fees appropriately. And I was like, well, yeah. And so just this idea that, like, when we don't charge our full fees, we don't feel good about ourselves. We are overwhelmed because we have to see more clients. So it's the idea that we're actually serving our clients by serving ourselves. It's like circular, right?
Yeah.
Cyclical.
Yeah. Right, because if the purpose of therapy is to give really good support and show up really well for our clients and really help them heal and really help them be with those painful things they haven't been able to be with previously, right, their traumas and experiences, we need to make sure that we're actually doing that to the best of our abilities.
100%.
Yeah.
You know, it's so interesting. I have found that clients that pay more for therapy are more invested. As weird as it sounds, when a therapist charges a higher rate or their full rate, they're actually serving the client because the client is more invested. So when I first went cash pay, it wasn't like I planned all this. I was working at another practice, was taking insurance. I was in the process of getting my hours. And this lady fired us all in one day. That's a whole nother podcast episode, but fired all the therapists on the same day. We all got together and started our own practice within a week. It was crazy. But because I started my own, I couldn't take insurance anymore because we were credentialed under her practice. So then we had to go cash pay. Well, when I called my clients, I was like, look, I can't take your Humana or whatever, but I can give you, your copay can be what you pay me. I was an associate. So I was doing sessions for like $40, $60. I mean, this was way back, but still. And then my full rate was $80. And the people that paid $80 consistently showed up and got better. And the clients that were paying $40 and $60 just like weren't really there. You know, they would miss sessions. They wouldn't do the homework. And so as I've grown in the profession and I keep raising my rates, I'm finding that the clients that come in are just more focused and working harder in their treatment.
Yeah. They're literally invested in their treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I have to say, these numbers that you're describing, how long ago was this? That you went out, like that you lost that job and had to step into cash pay?
It was probably around 2012, 2013.
Okay.
Yeah. I was in Colorado then, actually.
Yeah, because I'm like, these numbers are so low.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then when I came,
and even then, the difference made, like, showed up. The difference between 40 and 80 made a difference.
Totally, totally. And then I came to Savannah and started my practice here because I couldn't find a job, so might as well start a practice. And I think I started out charging 100, but was sliding down to 80 to get clients, you know, and then I was overwhelmed and trying to see as many clients as I could just to make the bills. Like, I didn't want a full-time caseload because I had children. And so I needed to see about 15 to 18 a week. Well, seeing 15 to 18 a week, charging $100 and then covering all my expenses, my marketing and all that stuff, I think I made like, I don't know, $36,000 my first year. And I'm like, what? Like,
yeah,
that's what somebody makes with a high school degree and, like, you know, yeah. this is not working. Like, I got to do something different. And my coach was like, look, what if you charged $125? And I was like, that's so awful. And he said, well, you're a fool anyway. So what you got to lose? Like, next person that calls, charge $125, see what happens.
Hey, group practice owner. Do you sometimes wonder if you made a mistake by starting a group practice? If so, you need my free guide, How to Stop Feeling Overworked and Underpaid in Your Group Practice. In this guide, you'll learn about how your money story is showing up in your relationship with money as a group practice owner. You'll learn the four keys to becoming the empowered financial leader of your group and the chief financial officer skills, those CFO skills that you need to create a healthy, sustainable group practice that will support you, your team, and your community for years to come. Plus, by getting the guide, you will definitely hear about it when doors open for my 6-month course, Money Skills for Group Practice Owners, for our 2026 cohort. To get the guide, go to moneynutsandbolts.com/overworked or click on the link in the show notes. That's moneynutsandbolts.com/overworked.
Well, of course, the next person that calls was a mother. I had seen her daughter and she wanted me to see the other daughter. So then I was like, oh my gosh, this is so manipulative because she knows I'm good, blah, blah. But anyway, charged the $125. She didn't bat an eye. You know, just, yeah. It was totally fine. And it just kind of went on from there.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I love the point that you made about the difference between, you know, being a pastor and having your own business, right? Being a pastor, the way that I would think about it from somebody kind of outside of the faith is like, you're plugged into a bigger institution, right? Like, there's a bigger machine there that's managing money and collecting money and distributing money. So you don't even actually have to think about that as part of your job. You know, you're just showing up and serving because the money's going to be there. When we work for ourselves, we're in a very different position when it comes to the money. So it almost feels like a little bit of a false comparison, like an apples to oranges, to even compare. But I do, and have heard that, I've had a few students who are married to pastors over the years. And what I have noticed is there is a certain frugality with being a pastor too. Like, you're guaranteed an income, but it's still a low income that also kind of shapes this idea about money. So I'm curious your perspective on frugality and faith and Christianity. Do you see these things being connected? Is that only in certain areas of the church?
No.
What is that relationship?
I think it's totally like that. Like, you feel like you have to be that way. And just this whole cultural idea of a pastor's wife. Yeah. It's like, oh, I have to hand make my own dresses for my girls, you know?
Totally. Totally.
I have to fit into this mold. I have to take the casseroles. I mean, it's so much of a mold, right? And
yeah,
I was worried about being a pastor's wife for that reason.
Sure.
And then being a therapist, it was like, oh, so you can give me free advice at church, or you can see me at a discounted rate because your husband's a pastor and that's how you live your life. And no, I can't do that, you know? And actually, I'm going to go so far as to say I can't do that because I've got to make sure our family has the money we need. Like, my husband definitely makes some money to live off of, but it's my salary that allows us to do anything extra, you know, allows us to go out to dinner, things like that. You know, so we're not stressed all the time.
Right.
Yes. In a way, like, my business and my work serves the church so he can keep doing his job.
Right.
You know, it doesn't make it much. He's in a smaller church right now trying to get it growing. So we can take that risk because I have my business. So I think that brings up this really important point of, by making more money, I can serve more people, right? And that could be I'm giving to nonprofits in the area. I'm going to fundraisers as a practice to be able to support things that I care about that align with our values as a practice, but also my own values. I can offer some sliding scales. I can pay my therapists more than if they were over at some agency work. That way they can enjoy their lives more, care for their families. You know, so again, it goes back into this cyclical experience of, by the practice making more money, I'm taking care of my therapist, they're taking care of their clients, we're taking care of the community. And if I was struggling to meet payroll, that would be terrible.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And then they wouldn't be paid enough and it wouldn't go well. They wouldn't be happy. They would be tired. They'd be overwhelmed. But I'm able to say, hey, you only have to see 6 clients a day because we charge enough. to make it that way, but the practice down the street, they have to see 8 clients a day to be able to make ends meet. So,
yeah, well, I mean, what I'm hearing is by you, and I don't know what the word is. It's like, I don't know if it's that you've made peace with money or you have accepted that money is part of life. Like, we can't get by without it. But I'm hearing that the work that you've done around money allows you to support your husband, which allows him to support more people in a way that actually his church salary could not.
That's right.
Right. And so you're allowing him to be a more healthy, expansive, happier version of himself. And I am curious, Whitney, and I'm asking this as someone, you know, a few steps removed. My grandmother was very involved in the church, but I have not been. And so I've kind of seen, you know, her world and her life and what the church meant to her and my grandfather. My grandfather went to the same church from like 4 years old till 90 when he passed away. The frugality piece, like, what is that about? Like, frugality and ministry? And is there an expectation that folks, like Christians, should also be frugal? Is frugal good in general? Or is that more about folks who are actually just leading the church? There's a value of frugality. How do these things fit together?
I do think that people sometimes feel like they have to be meek, right?
Yes.
In need. When I think of those terms, I think that's more of a heart condition. I think you can have money and still be humble. I think you can have money and still be of the meek, of the poor in spirit. I mean, you know, I'm referencing the Beatitudes here, but it's not just about that financial dollar. It's about your spirit and how your spirit tends to that money. Mm-hmm. I also, I just had coffee with somebody right before I came here, and we were talking about just pastors that aren't good, doing bad stuff, right? Grooming up women and affairs and all this. Somebody was like, so yeah, what do you think happened to this guy that was so successful as a pastor? And I said, did he buy a plane? You know, because it's just like, there's also this, the opposite is also true, that there are some Christians out there that are just making so much money,
yes,
excessively. And yeah, these mega churches and what that, yes, means, and people building themselves up. And that's sick too.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So do you, right, think some people are like, I can't be that? So they go to this other extreme of, well, I shouldn't make any money. Well, that's not good either.
No. Yeah, there's two extremes there, neither of which is a healthy relationship with money. Because the word that's coming up for me right now is stewardship, of like being a good steward for your money. You know, money is power in this world. It allows us to take care of others. It allows us to express our values. But there's a, you know, a responsibleness there that we can have, or there's a warmer word I'm looking for there. I don't know if it's like gratitude or being connected to something bigger that can allow us to use our money in really beautiful, powerful ways. And then at the same time, money can also be used to hurt, abuse, right? Like to just build up our own egos. You know, there's all this potential there. But yeah, like, does the idea of stewardship resonate with you? Or is there another word you would use for, you know, what you've been talking about?
No, I love that word.
Yeah.
I love that word. And as a group practice owner, the most that I think about is how I care for my team.
Yes.
You know, and as I'm hearing you talk, I'm thinking, how can I allow them to have a job they love and get paid a compensation that works for them, that they feel good about? And how can we create that culture together?
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of responsibility there that you have as a leader in a group.
Yeah.
So I am curious, you know, the guilt piece. You mentioned guilt at the beginning. Does guilt still come up for you sometimes when it comes to, you know, charging your fee or being financially successful? Do you ever feel guilty about that?
Yeah. So I was thinking about this as we were preparing. I was thinking about the interview because, Lindsay, you and I got to hang out in Orlando back in March, and I just really enjoyed our time together. You had so many great things to say about money. And one of the things we discussed, we were like, well, how's your group practice? How's the money? And I was so embarrassed. Remember that?
You were. I
was
like, I remember.
I don't want to tell you how much money I make. And I have the issue of, I feel so guilty of how much money I make. And I don't even, I'm still kind of like processing and dealing with that still. But yeah, when my accountant calls me and says, hey, here's the amount, I'm like, what? Like, it's this amount that I'm like, I don't even know how to put my mind around that. And then I feel guilty, yes, about that. So then I just kind of like separate myself from it. I'm like, whatever, we're fine, move on.
Yeah, you ran away when I asked you that question, just to give folks context. Diane, who coaches with me, Diane and Whitney and I were hanging out in my hotel room chatting. And then I asked Whitney one of those questions that would be very rude if I wasn't who I am, or maybe it is rude, but I still asked. I asked you, how much do you make? Like, what did you get paid from your group practice? And you said, I have to go to the washroom. And ran away. And Diane and I had a little laugh, which you could hear. We were like, oh, she's running away. Okay, bye, Whitney. And then you came back and told us. So you literally fled with embarrassment. So yeah, so there is a, you know, I can witnessed and hear that there can be, there's still some reconciling to do.
Definitely. Yeah, it's been interesting. This is timely. We're working on implementing EOS. Are you familiar with EOS?
I learned about this last night at a networking dinner.
Oh, well.
So there you go.
Maybe yes. There's something happening in the spiritual for you. So EOS is an entrepreneur operating system. It's from the book Traction, if people are interested in learning more. And there's like all EOS library of books, but it's just a framework for how to better run your business. And when you get to a certain point, they actually recommend when you hit about the $2 million mark is when people start to really struggle with the owner just has so much responsibility and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, so I actually recently hired a fractional integrator.
Ooh.
Talk about expensive, but I was like, hey, I got the money. Come on.
Yeah.
I hired the fractional integrator to help me kind of start implementing EOS. And one of the concepts of it is you've got to let people into your money.
Mm-hmm.
Lindsay, I've never showed anyone the bank statements other than my accountant. You know what I mean? And so I sat down with my soon-to-be integrator who's like employed at the practice. And I was like, look, I'm about to let you under the hood and I'm freaking out about it. Like, and now I'm going to have this extra accountability. Someone's going to see how much money is in there and I'm nervous about what they're going to think about it or judge me for it. And so I'm constantly like, well, I spend money on all these things. Almost like I'm trying to justify.
Yes.
And I don't have to, but I do it, you know, so this is going to be good for me. You know, I'm trusting people. And if you want to grow, you've got to.
You do.
Got to.
You do. Yeah. And I am curious, like, thinking about faith too, if faith is part of this, and maybe it's not, what do you think is some of the content of that embarrassment for you? Like, what are the fears about the fact that you have been so financially successful?
Well, I'm worried that they're going to think I need to pay them more.
Okay. Yep.
I'm very conservative with money because I've seen so many practices. I'm sure you've seen this so many times. So many people who are taking out loans to meet payroll. People I would never think would have had to have done that are doing it consistently. Or people who are like, I have 10 therapists and I make less than I did when I was a solo practice owner. All the time. Now, the clinicians aren't going to understand that, see that. They don't know what you're spending all that money on. So that's the thing that worries me is that I'm going to like all of a sudden make all these decisions and then I'm going to have no money. And then I have to go back to like, this is crazy. Like, I'm fine. Like, it's, this is not what it is. So I guess it's that fear of not having enough.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe that does tie into what we were talking about earlier. Like, so when I went through college, I was a missionary for 3 years at the University of Georgia campus where I raised funds to be able to stay and mentor students and do ministry. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. I mean, you just never knew when your next check was coming. I mean, I remember sitting and praying, I need a check. I can't pay my taxes and they're due next week. Of course, things would always work out. Check would come at the right last minute, you know, and it would be everything I needed. But like, that's how I started my life as an adult was, I don't know if I'm going to be able to pay my bills. And I'm sharing a room with somebody and I'm 25 years old, not sharing a house, sharing a room. And so I think I started at that place. I remember being like, I can't go to Chick-fil-A. It's too expensive.
Yeah.
And so I do think like, I don't feel it, but on my logical mind as a therapist, the things I know, there's probably a connection there.
Sure.
For how I think about it now.
Yeah. I mean, where you've gotten to, I'm sure you never could have imagined when you were sharing a bedroom and not able to go to Chick-fil-A.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Fortunately, I had a friend that paid for my Chick-fil-A. So.
Oh, that's nice. So, Good friends.
I know. Yeah. Indebted to her. So then later when we needed to go on a girls trip and her husband had lost his job, I was like, girl, I got you. I can pay for your way. And, you know, and so it was a really healing moment for me, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. I think about money as a resource to be shared.
That's right.
And I think about this, especially in family, you know, where in my family, one side of our family is much more financially resourced than the other side of the family. And sometimes I see us as a conduit just flowing that resource between the two sides. Because it's like, there's more than enough here, right? If we distribute this well, if we're good stewards for this money, it's like we can all be happier and healthier for it.
So yeah, I do really think about money of that way, that nice flow between friends and people, the, you know, our loved ones. So I am curious for you, Whitney, thinking about the practical side of money, like what practical systems have you implemented in your business that have helped you feel grounded about money and make these great decisions that you're making that have gotten you where you are?
Yeah, well, I'm going to call out Julie Ayers for Profit First for Therapists. Great book. And, you know, we talked about Mike Michalowicz earlier, so the Profit First. I know you talk about it a lot on your podcast. So once I started implementing Profit First, that was game changer, where I was like, oh, I am doing better than I realized, because I started putting the money in the accounts and I was like, oh, look at all this extra I have. Like, this is great. And that was when I was able to start implementing health insurance and retirement for my team. Because for a long time, I was like, I don't think I have enough money to do that. And then Julie's team was like, yeah, you do. I was like, okay. So I've been doing Profit First ever since. And that has given me so much confidence in where I'm at and what I'm doing. So I would say that is number one. Another thing that I have done is buy the building. So I purchased it's a long story, and I have a whole podcast on my Wise Practice podcast. I did a whole episode about my journey of buying this building and the faith part of it, of God directing me into it. But it was an 18-month project from the time I put the offer in to the time that it got completely renovated and ready to go.
Wow.
But that's been great. That taught me a lot about investment, a lot about retirement, and I'm really happy to be paying myself rent. So that's been really great. Something else that's coming up for me as we're kind of talking about this is this, you know, going back to calling. It's been very interesting to me because Water's Edge, doing great, you know, and that's what I can rely on for my income. But the consulting business, I mean, the consulting business is great. It's just a newer business. And so it makes money in a very different kind of way. And I don't have like a lot of people working for me, just a couple. But the point is, I do that work more because I love it. What I make, you know, I mean, it's something, but I could make a lot more money if I just kept focusing on Water's Edge and growing that. I do the consulting because I love it. I love what I do. I love seeing practices grow. I get to do stuff like this with you, Lindsay. Like, this is so much fun and brings me so much energy and passion. And like, even looking at the summit, it's like, well, yeah, I do make some money off the summit, but I could run a mastermind group for 6 months and make more than I make off that summit. Like, it's a hard thing to figure out. Because we can't judge everything on money, but then sometimes people are like, well, you should look at how much you make. Is it worth what you make? So it's hard for me to find that balance of how much should I be looking at money and how much should I just be looking at how much I love something. And then for me, again, I feel called to do consulting. Like I feel like the Lord made that clear and I ran away from it for a long time. And the summit is something that I just see God's hand in it. I just can't walk away from that, even if I'm not making that much money, because it's so life-giving for me and other people.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the beautiful things about where you're at is you have built a machine with your group practice. And that's the language that I like to use when I'm working with folks. Like, there's a machine there and it takes building. And sometimes you have to tweak it and you're like, oh, this was all wrong. Oh, shoot, I have to have all these hard conversations. Like, it's rarely a smooth path to build a successful group practice. But once you do, like, that's your bread and butter. But then you can also go have fun, right? Like, you don't actually have to make money off of the consulting and the summit. I think you will, right? But there's also this piece of meaning, right? Like I have a good friend who's very financially successful and basically has it made. He's 30 years old. He could basically just stop working at this point. But, you know, he kind of chased that dream of like retiring early, and then he could do that now, but he's like, but I don't, that's not satisfying. Like, what is life really about, right? Like, what actually fills your cup? And it's been interesting over the last few years to watch him trying all these different things, because he has the money and the means to try living, you know, in different places and living the kind of expat fun lifestyle. And it's like, well, that's not satisfying. And we were just talking the other day about how at the end of the day, a lot of life is just about, you know, like being with your people, taking care of your people, doing the stuff that you love, right? And this is what I'm hearing is this is part of you serving your people, right?
Yeah, definitely a way that I'm serving my people. And Water's Edge allows me to do that. And it lets me do fun things. Like, that's how I went to the ACA conference and was able to speak. Like, the consulting is my platform to be able to do fun things that I personally need in my life, because it makes me a better therapist. And they truly do feed each other as well. So, you know, that's important too. I think there's also something to be said for, like, we use our money this is something I'm learning right now, to create our team, right? And so like for the next conference, which I'll tell you, I hate working with the hotels. It's the worst. Negotiating.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So now I hired somebody to do that. So yeah. This year,
100%.
She's going to get all that together for me. And I'm like, wow, like that's what I spend my money on. Things that allow me to move the needle forward and things that I love. And I don't have to feel guilty that I made enough money to do that, you know, because it actually allows me to do more of good God's good work in the world because I'm not focused on this hotel thing, right? And so I see so many therapists or just people in general, they don't want to invest their money because they're scared. Well, when you're not investing your money, you're actually not doing more of the mission that God put on your heart, and you become the bottleneck for ministry. If you say that your work is ministry, you're getting in the way of that. And you could be doing so much more by putting your money into the marketing services you need or into business consulting or into someone helping answer the phones, whatever that is. You can extend your hand more in the world by having these things. You need the money to do it, so you better charge enough so that you can do those things, and then you're actually doing the mission better.
Right. You're really expanding your reach. Yeah, because there's people who need what you do, whatever that is, right? And this is something that I talk about with marketing stuff too, but like when we're not really putting ourselves out there, the people who really need us are not able to find us, or we're not able to serve them because we're busy doing something that we hate, like negotiating with a hotel instead of offering an amazing workshop or opening up another spot on our calendar, right? So there is a kind of like a blunting there of potential or dampening of your gift when we're spending all this time doing things that are really not our unique contribution.
Yeah, my marketing specialist and I were just talking the other day. She's like, what are we doing with your social media? And I was like, well, we are trying to reach as many faith-based practice owners as possible so that they don't feel alone in the work they do. And then they can find community and someone to help them be successful. That's what we're doing. But if I didn't have the money to pay her, that wouldn't be happening.
No. Yeah. Whitney, thank you.
Oh, I love it.
I have so enjoyed this conversation. For folks who are listening who want to get further into your world, can you tell us about where to find you?
Yeah.
Some of the great things you do?
Yes. So you can head to wisepracticeconsulting.com. I do have a podcast. You were a guest not too long ago. So that's the Wise Practice podcast. But yeah, you can head to my website. I've got a free PDF, 4 ways to market and network with churches. If you're a faith-based therapist or not, it's helpful because it's hard to know how do we talk to pastors. So you can grab that. And there's just a bunch of other, we have a membership community for faith-based practice owners. And then we host a summit every year that I've been talking about. We usually do that in the fall, the Wise Practice Summit. So yeah, check it out.
Wonderful. Thanks for coming on the podcast today, Whitney.
Thank you.
I really appreciate Whitney coming on the podcast today to share her experiences and her growth over time too with her relationship to money as a Christian. I really like the idea that we dug into about taking care of money and what you can do with money. And, you know, we can always see these extremes, I think, in all sorts of different types of communities that we're part of and in ways of looking at the world of extreme ways to be with money, right? Like we can be extremely frugal and self-sacrificing, or we can be extremely kind of consumptive and flashy when it comes to money. And generally speaking in life, my default is that the truth is somewhere in the middle. The balance is somewhere in the middle. And money is a tool. So when we can manage that tool from grounded, loving, values-aligned places, whatever those values are for you, then you can use that tool to do good things in the world. And I love this idea of really connecting with the potential that money brings to our lives. So I so appreciate Whitney coming on the podcast today. You can check out the links in the show notes to get further into her world. Thank you for joining me on the podcast today. I'm Lindsay Bonham, therapist turned money coach and creator of Money Skills for Therapists. If you're ready to go from money confusion and shame to feeling clear and empowered, my free on-demand masterclass is the best place to start. You'll learn my 4-step framework to get your private practice finances finally working for you. Register today using the link in the show notes or go to moneynutsandbolts.com under masterclass. I look forward to supporting you.